see.
Oh, that is a long time, so then we just pause. And then it just sits.
I'm gonna try anymore.
Long about the end of March.
And I know that this paid.
Good morning, I'm calling this meeting to order. This is the Subcommittee on Human Services of Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Today is February 4th. Welcome, everybody, to our first meeting together. We have only one item on our agenda today. This is an informational meeting, no voting. We're going to hear primarily from our Legislative Fiscal Office analysts. What I'd like to do, though, just because we haven't all sat here together at this table before, let's just introduce ourselves to each other and describe the district that we represent. In other words, maybe a half a sentence, but something more than just the district number. Let's start with Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. I am a family physician in addition to being a senator, and I represent most of Northwest Portland, a bunch of unincorporated Washington County, a little tiny bit of unincorporated Multnomah County, where I happen to live, and about a third of Beaverton. So I go from the river all the way out to Rock Creek, for those of you who know the Portland metro area. And I have a really cool, diverse district.
I'm Jackie Winters. I represent Senate District 10, which encompasses South Salem, West Salem, Monmouth, Independence, Almsville, and Turner. So I have the honor of having both urban as well as rural small towns in my district, and I'm a part of the Chronologically Advantaged group, or disadvantaged, whichever.
Advantage.
We value your expertise.
Been in this building for quite some time.
Hi, I'm Al Bates, like most of you know me, and my district is Southern Oregon, and according to the phone calls we get at our office, Northern California. we get a lot of calls from Weed and Wairika, and we have to explain to them that's a different state. They don't quite always get it. We've had them actually get angry over this. You know, I know you're my senator. I saw you on TV, and you're not answering my questions. We literally get that. I mean, we really do. We give them answers and give them phone numbers, and we never hear from them again. But anyway, so I think you all know me, and I'm a family doc primarily. This is my second job, and I'm looking forward to working with all you. And I'm going to ask Lori to step up here, please, for a minute. I want a before and after picture.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think we'll have more gray hair after?
No, Lori, you need to be in the picture.
I was hoping.
You need to be in the picture. Yes, you do. Well, Lori.
Lori wouldn't come up here. I asked her to, but she'll now
on.
You'll come up. Okay.
Come on.
Come on, Lori, get in here.
I'm more worried about the before than the after.
Get up here.
Well, that thing is, can you let go wide enough to do it?
Can you see all this? You're going to have to go back.
We can smush in a little bit more.
Yeah, no. Let's go. Let's get it.
Yeah,
let's
stand up. Yeah, that's a stand up.
Come on,
last photo. Okay,
right. No, I want this one right here.
Don't worry, I'll wrestle him into submission, babe.
And one more just for good measure. Excellent.
Well, that's a great
idea. Thank you. Thanks.
That is a good idea.
We'll forgive you. Can you send that out to us?
We'll
send
that out. Yeah.
We talked about doing that. We'll see how much gray I grow.
Let's see if I look 2019 again.
I'm Wenda Ames. I'm staff in the Legislative Fiscal Office. I am the analyst for the Oregon Health Authority.
Nancy Nathanson. I'm a representative for District 13, which is primarily North Eugene and some of downtown. For people who know a little bit about Eugene, I represent Autzen Stadium, the home of the Ducks. My district also includes a lot of urban and urbanized area. I'm very proud to represent the downtown train station, for example, and the downtown public library. But it's primarily an urban district. I just love representing that part of Eugene.
And I'm Deb Boone, and I represent the district you all wish you did. Upper Left Coast, District 32, from Astoria down to half of Tillamook County, inland to Banks, not Forest Grove, and then out to Gaston. So I have wine country, I have the beach, I have the Coast Range, so hiking, all that stuff. And I was in this committee a long time ago, spent 6 years in the policy committee back in the day, and also Ways and Means and the sub and full. And I've been in the building since 89, so show a little respect.
So. 89?
89. Not as a member, all of it, 16 or 17 years as a legislative assistant to 7 different legislators.
But this is the start of our 6th term together.
Yes.
Yes. Andy Olson, state representative out of Albany.
Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, state rep out of House District 46, which is parts of southeast and northeast Portland. Very economically diverse. We have higher education, higher income in the Laurelhurst, Mount Tabor areas, and then we've got really working class people, many of whom are struggling with a lot of the issues that many Oregonians are struggling with in communities like Lentz, Foster Powell, Palhurst Gilbert. You may have heard some of those before. Mm-hmm. And I'm a public health person. I'm on both the health and the human service policy committees. This is my first time on this committee, and I'm really delighted to be here, see the policy and the budget all the way through.
I'm Dwayne Stark, House District 4, which is pretty much Eagle Point, Central Point, and every point between Medford and Grants Pass. So I have both 2 counties there that I'm part of. My profession is that I am a pastor. I oversee local and international outreach for a large church in Grants Pass. And so I do a lot of work in the community, a lot of work internationally. Human services is really where my life exists. We're adoptive and foster parents, and this is just our world. So I'm pleased to be here.
Thank We're going to need you.
Lori?
And I'm Lori Byerly, and I'm also from the Legislative Fiscal Office, just like Linda, and I am assigned to the Department of Human Services budget. So you'll see a lot of Linda and I in this subcommittee.
Good. Linda. Ms. Ames.
This is your agenda today.
It is. And Madam Chair, member of the subcommittee, today is just a brief orientation. We should have plenty of time, so if you have questions, feel free to interrupt. Lori's going to broadcast some of this stuff, and I'll start out with the first part is just some orientation stuff, so procedural, a little bit about process over the course of this session, and then we'll finish up with a little bit of budget context that you can have in your heads as we start into hearing from agencies. So as you know, 8:30 to 10, Monday through Thursday, normally we, you know, later on there may be times when we don't meet every day, and then often full will meet on Friday mornings, especially later on. And especially as we get into work sessions where we must have a quorum, please let me know if you're not going to be able to be here so that if we need to get a co-chair or somebody in here to do our votes, we can arrange it ahead of time. Rules, we've attached them, although I don't imagine you'll really want to look at them particularly, but the key thing is, because we have 3 Senate and 5 House members, this means that 2 Senate members and 3 House members must be here both to make a quorum and to pass out through any work sessions. So to do any actions, then, you need this quorum. You do not need a quorum for informational meetings or public hearings. So if you happen to be a little late for a public hearing, we can get started. Operations, just be aware. Microphones pick up side conversations, so be very careful about what you say up here if you don't want it to be heard by the world. And mostly we just use a voice vote, although occasionally the committee assistant will call roll. Excuse me. We will always provide you information for the committee through OLIS. It's available to you and the public all at the same time. We try to get it out there at least 2 to 3 days before the hearing that it's connected to. And it's up to you. Some people you'll see bring their computers to track along. You can often, the agencies will project a presentation, or you can print paper. Right now, the meeting notices is 72 hours before the first time we have a public hearing on a bill, and 48 hours for any other public hearings or work sessions. Although as we get late in session, usually those times shorten up a bit. We can carry over bills if we need to the next day as long as we carry it over for the same thing. So public hearing to public hearing. The one piece of paper we do bring in for you is the agenda, so you always have something to write on. And there are supplies over on the cupboard on the left if you happen to need pencils, paper, highlighters. And finally, I will email you every Thursday an agenda for the following week in case you want to plan ahead on preparation. So the first 2 weeks are included in the packet on page 6 and 7. I don't know how. We didn't tab these to click around. Okay, so you'll see tomorrow you'll have an overview on the governor's budget from the policy advisors and DAS Chief Financial Office. And then next week, Monday, we'll start in with presentations from DHS, and then by the end of the week, we'll hear from Long-Term Care Ombudsman.
And just for, and that doesn't mean that we'll be done with DHS
for
3 days. The reason we've inserted Long-Term Care Ombudsman into the conversation at that point is because we're going to talk about aging and people with disabilities first, so it's for subject matter context. But it will be several more days of Department of Human Services presentation after that.
So Madam Chair, a lot of way I get this, I mean, not that I've ever sat in on a Ways and Means subcommittee before, but the first initial portion of weeks and everything is all informational of the agencies
yes.
that we're involved in. And then that's when we dig into the budgets after that.
Yes. However, agencies are presenting their budgets. Some of them try to give an overview of everything they're doing. Some of them, because they represent such a huge array of activities, will zero in or focus on a few things that are different this biennium from the previous biennium, or here are the three big hot issues, and they'll spend more time on that and less trying to give the comprehensive overview of everything. Each one has a little bit different approach to how they develop their summary and their presentation to us. It's fine to ask questions at that time, or at least to indicate it to the whole committee, or you're welcome to come talk to us as the co-chair, Senator Bates, or me. I'd like to dig into this one aspect. You know, they were talking about this particular work area or this particular program, and I'd like to spend a little more time on it. We only had 5 minutes, you know, out of a big DHS budget, and I think it's worth more. So there will probably be issues that arise as a result of the overview where you realize you want to spend more time focusing on that area. We can ask questions during the presentation. It's generally a good idea, though, to ask the question in a succinct a manner as possible, and they should answer it that way. You will see many answers come back to us within 24 or 48 hours in writing. They will send it by email. It will also be posted on OLIS, so the public heard the question, then the public has access to see the response. If we get involved in, if we allow ourselves to get sidetracked pursuing a line of questioning where something seemed very interesting or we have some concerns in that area, we could get sidetracked for a half hour and then never finish that particular presentation. So the way it's usually done is you ask a question, you get an initial response, you may get further response in writing, and then we may choose it as something to ask them to come back and talk to us some more about on a different day.
So, again, you know, and then just kind of a follow-up question, but also, Senator Bates, I really appreciate your response on that, too. We're coming into an entirely different set of dynamics this time, because just not the GRB that we're going to be listening to. You already have a co-chair's budget that's been thrown out. And generally, I don't think that happens till like
March or so.
So,
yes.
This is a little different ballgame. So, I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yes. Senator Bates.
I kind of gave an overview, if I could. I'm going to follow what Representative Nathan said. These two budgets, DHS and OHA, are the largest and most complex in state government, and I'd argue that with anybody. I've been on all the other budget committees with the exception of higher ed, okay, but I've been pretty involved in that too. These are the most complex ones. If we were sitting here 4 days a week, all the time, we would start, you know, getting a feel for it. We have 5 months, okay? You can't possibly, as sort of a board of directors, understand everything that goes out in these programs. They're too big. They're north of $20 billion of federal match money. I would refer you to the printout that LFO gives us for those who are new. And I actually go back to it myself every time. We have a great printout from LFO describing the programs and giving the numbers for each program of where they were last year, what the budget was expected to be, where we're at this point. It's really good information. My staff is, which is new, I've assigned one to DHS, one to OHA, and they are carefully reading through that data. What's that called?
The big book, LFO analysis.
Analysis.
The 13-15 budget.
It's very readable. It starts making a little bit of sense to you. I go back to it all the time. That's what my Bible is. I look at the governor's budget and the co-chair's budget as a guide. Okay, things are going to be changing with revenue changes and different priorities bubbling up to the session. I look at that as a guide, and then, you know, if things aren't matching, then Nancy and I will march down there, and away we go. We've had these conversations before. A lot of the work is done with Nancy and I and LFO sitting down for extra hours. We will keep you informed of those discussions. You'll be at other committee meetings during that time. You won't be able to be there. And so we have a little more leeway in that because we're not on all these other committees, so we can work on these issues. So those we'll bring you those and keep you up to speed. As Nancy said, if you see an area you really want to dig into, please feel free to. It really helps us. It really helps us. And bring the information back to us, because these are such huge budgets and they're so complex, there's no way we can get all our arms around them. A quick other things you'll see. One, the agencies will come together, give their presentation. I call it a dog and pony show, and kind of what it is. If you can stand it, wait till they get through it and then ask questions. I always jot mine down. Occasionally I stop and say, I don't understand what you're talking about. But generally speaking, we can let them get through it. It works better. There'll be times we'll have advocates come in, and commonly that's what I call runover time. It's time to leave the committee, and you guys need to go different things. I and Nancy also usually stays and listens, so they feel they've been heard. The co-chairs are here. If you need to leave during that time, you have to go to another committee, or you have to feel free to do so. Okay, we'll cover it for you. The last thing is what I call stacking. And you'll find bills coming in from, as the session goes along, we'll be getting bills in from other committees that have referral to us because there's money attached to them. And we stack those bills up, and at the end, in consultation with the co-chairs, we decide which ones are going out and which ones are staying back. And that's usually budgetary decisions, and sometimes there's other issues too. We don't make policy here. We only do financials, which is a lie. Clearly, we do both, okay? And you got to make the money match the policy sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of a overview.
Thank you.
Would you agree, Nancy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Yes.
You missed one piece, and that is that we will be doing, if history repeats itself, hearings out in the communities. Yeah. You know, for me, that's probably inside the building. Usually, when we're having hearings, you're pretty much it's the advocates and what have you. But outside, when we go into the communities, you know, you're hearing from the general public, by and large. And we actually travel in several locations around the state so that there's hopefully a geographic balance. I would encourage, you know, all of you to attend those. I think they're extremely enlightening from the standpoint of not only what we fund in the budget, but also what the actual citizens are saying that they would like to see us have in the budget discussion. I would also encourage you to really pay attention to Budget 101. It's in this packet. You know, often we think only in terms of general fund. This particular committee particularly has multiple funding sources because you've got federal funds. And so I would really encourage you to actually spend some time, you know, understanding how those dollars come in and because you're going to have responsibility for how they're expended. Yeah.
Good. And the other thing, she reminded me of one more thing, too. Sometimes, as individuals, you may want to go out and visit a thing in the field, state hospital, DHS, you know, area that you're interested in, feel free to do it. If you want to take time off committee, do that and report back. It's encouraged. Encouraged. Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson?
We don't have a DHS office in Hawaii.
That was your allocation for the month.
Really?
Okay, this is great because you've like covered half of the orientation material now.
Okay.
On page two, a little bit about process. While we'll spend most of our time hearing about budgets and budget bills, there are some other issues that come to the committee. You've talked a bit about the policy bills that will come especially later on. There'll be budget-related fee bills. Agencies do have the ability to use an administrative process to raise fees during the interim, and those need to be ratified in a bill in order to continue. Well, especially public health and OHA has a lot of federal grant requests, so they'll be coming in here for permission to apply. I think we have our first one week after next. And they're time sensitive, so we need to hear them before they need to apply. There are some agency reports that are required by budget notes from previous sessions that will be coming in for formal acceptance. Probably in the early May period, both DHS and OHA do a rebalance, so they will have a new caseload forecast, and we will run a bill to do the current biennium rebalance adjustments that may be needed to be done. That also has implications for the 15-17 budget, potentially, up or down. It's always a surprise. So we've just now started preliminary forecast meetings, so it's a fairly long process. And then policy bills. In terms of process, this is what you really talked about. We've kind of split and we've sent directions out to agencies in this regard. Phase one is we will do a little introduction. We do some little documents that can be helpful. Then the agency will present generally what they do, what their budget is, major budget issues, outcomes, that sort of thing. And then the DAS chief financial officer will present a high-level summary of the governor's budget. There will be public testimony time for every agency. For the little agencies, that's typically the same day the agency does the presentation. But for DHS and OHA, we have tentatively set aside 2 full days for DHS programs and 2 full days for OHA programs. Then phase two, that'll be last half of April and part of May, typically may not be all agencies, but the specific purpose is if you've identified issues you want more information on, that can be in phase two. Major, it's really to help you get to final budget decisions. So we will plan that if there are investments in the governor's budget in some of these programs, that the agency will come with a lot more detail about that, so you can start deciding if this is something you're interested in or not. Probably we'd hear about some reductions and reduction options that you might want to hear more about. And that will be somewhat fluid as we go along and decide what is of greatest interest. And then the last phase will actually be the work sessions. We haven't gotten any direction yet, but the hope is with the early co-chair framework, maybe on some of the smaller agencies, we could start doing work sessions earlier than we did 2 years ago, maybe even as early as in March. The general order we've laid out, sometimes schedules can change a bit as things come up, but first DHS and second OHA. And all their different programs. Just like long-term care ombudsman, where we fit them in next to aging and people with disabilities, we've kind of tucked the small agencies in, like Psych Security Review Board, we'll hear the day after we hear on about the state hospital. So places where there's a lot of connection between budgets. You also have 2 agencies that aren't technically part of the human services program area, the Board of Nursing and Medical Board. We've put those right in the middle this time. And they're not general fund agencies, so they're a little different than the other things you'll be hearing. As we start each agency, we'll have a number of materials out there on OLIS for you. You guys talked a little bit about this just a minute ago. These are really your tools for figuring out if you want to learn more about a program or an agency. So the governor's budget document will be out there, and the agencies also put together a ways and means. We refer to it as a reference binder. Those will all have a lot of narrative about programs, also some budget information. And the governor's budget document has a ton of technical budget information. Then we've done the LFO 2015-17 budget review documents for each agency, a 2 or 3 page summary of what the key 15-17 budget issues are. For OHA and DHS, we've also done one for each of the major programs. And those will have the numbers at the top so you can look over the last few years and by fund type. And then in here, I've also put the link for that LFO analysis that Senator Bates was talking about. While the numbers in that are still 13-15, it is a really good description of programs and issues. Typically, the issues don't change hugely from one year to the next. Then when we actually get to working budgets, the work sessions that we'll do on budget bills will approve the budget as well as the key performance measures. We'll provide a summary with recommendations as well as a number of budget forms for you to look at ahead. Then we'll develop amendments based on your actions, and we'll also draft up a budget report, which is, for a big agency, it'll be a fairly extensive document that lists out all the actions you've taken. This will then be taken to the full and to the floors for as it goes along with the bill. Budget notes can be included in budget reports if members believe that some additional direction might be needed for the agency. Any proposed budget notes come through the subcommittee co-chairs and then ultimately must be approved by the Ways and Means co-chairs. The chair, when we do actually do a work session on a bill, the chair will assign carriers to carry the bill to the full committee and to the floor of each chamber. I have noted here that when we assign carriers, we must remember that four of the members of the subcommittee are not on the full committee, so they could potentially carry bills, especially policy bills, to the floors, but not to the full. That was kind of for me because I always mess up when we get carriers.
Yeah.
Nancy's so Representative Nathanson will be very busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The three of us.
And then we write a short pony that you use at full and as well as on the floors, a general description of the bill. Often for policy bills, members like their own staffs to write their speech. And we also always try to be at the side aisle whenever a bill is on the floor. So if you need us to sit with you or you want to ask us questions, we'll be around. Then the last part of this presentation, which I think starts on page 9, is a little bit of budget context. So, again, since we have a co-chair budget this time, it is a little different. We actually have a target of where this subcommittee is aiming towards, and that target is $140 million general fund below the governor's budget. So that's a little less than 3% of the GF in this program area. And in fact, when you look at these graphs, on the bottom is the governor's budget, on the top is the co-chair budget, and the blue is the human services slice. You cannot even actually see the difference between the two of them. And so part of you might say, well, that isn't such a big deal, but $140 million will be very challenging. It is a lot of program.
Linda, you might also want to explain just a little bit
about
the federal match.
Right.
Okay.
And that is the other thing. This is a little different than many other programs because depending on where those reductions come, if they come with federal match, you may lose two times again as much as the general fund reduction because our typical match is about 63% federal.
Yep.
Can I make a comment? Just, are you, if you're looking at this, these two slides, these are the $18 billion in either one of these slides. Our total budget is $27 billion with federal match, so it's disproportionate here. I always get upset when they do it this way because you're not looking at the true picture.
Right.
You take $140 million out, you could be taking a half a billion out of budgets. This is very misleading to see it this way, and I'll have a conversation with my co-chair. To present this budget this way, it looks like, oh, you're going to cut 2 or 3% out. It's a massive cut to our budget, massive, because of federal match. So I don't know how I have no idea how we can get there, and we'll have a discussion about with co-chairs. I don't know if that's what your position is, but it's crazy.
Yeah, there are different ways to look at it. Actually, I was fixating on the common practice in LFO to express things in thousands of millions. And I find it really hard to use charts like this with the public. So when I see something in thousands of millions, I usually prefer to write something like 9.2 billion. Or
yeah, mm-hmm. Me too.
So if there would be a way to, I know sometimes in your reports you express things like that, express things in that manner. It would be helpful. Is so that I don't just have to convert everything myself before I hand it out.
I think Representative Nason and Coacher, we can accommodate that. I think in terms of taking the information from the statewide budget, what happens if we don't do that is the tiny agencies become invisible. And so I think from the, when we're sending the statewide budget, the idea is to be able to show even the tiny, even the small things, but definitely in the human services program area, it's the big stuff. And we'll try to, and I think we've gave you information in the past that was more at the billion-dollar type of data. This is kind of a starting point. So we have, I think, a lot of material to work with over the course of the next 4 months that we can pin down a little bit differently.
Thank you.
And then the only other comment here is the co-chairs in the big picture, in the statewide picture, the co-chairs put about $220 million of general fund more than the governor into education. That came out of human services and public safety and a number of other areas. And so many areas are facing a challenge, just like this committee.
And unless caseload is dramatically down, we're going to have a real problem.
I'd like to ask you your comment on how we use the term investment. I noticed that you used the term investment a few minutes ago. That's inside language that most of us understand in the public. When I'm explaining it, it usually means this is investment means we're going to spend more in this area than we have in the past. Either spend more on the same or similar programs, or we're finding money from somewhere else to put into a new program. But investment is another way of saying more money than we used to. Is that how you would you concur?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
And I would add that, and sometimes that is truly a new thing, that we're a brand new program that's being bought or a new initiative. Frequently, that term has also been used to talk about something that was potentially started last biennium. A lot of times something gets initiated partway through a biennium, and then the roll-up effect of that is a much larger number. And so sometimes that investment will refer to a decision that was actually made in a prior biennium that really wasn't biennialized until now. So there will be a big roll-up on that. So frequently it's used not just for the brand-new stuff, but to really identify those things that were actually fully budgeted in a new biennium, too.
That's helpful. Thank you.
The other comment I was going to make is really a follow-up on Senator Bates' comment. A number of things will change before we finally make decisions on some of these budgets in May or June. Like I said, in May, we will have the rebalance with a new caseload along with the 15-17 impacts of that. That can go up or down. We will have two more state revenue forecasts in March and mid-May. But part of the reason I think it's helpful to have this in your mind as you're at, so you are focused on the fact that you will need to be thinking about where do you do less. And as you're hearing from the agencies, if you have that in the back of your mind, it may focus you on questions and other discussion where you want to focus because of that. Then Lori was going to go through a little bit more of a little bit of budget detail.
So the next page in the document is just the piece from the co-chair framework for human services, just as a reminder of what they've kind of said. It identifies again at the high level those general fund lottery fund values for the program area and provides a list of things that they were interested in trying to find funding for to continue the next biennium. So that's just for your information. Again, that's part of the big document they released last month. Then on the next page, what we try to do, and again, this is only focused on just the general fund lottery fund portion of the budget, or general fund portion, because that's where the cut is, that is where the co-chair framework differs from the governor's budget, recognizing that we do have a lot of discussion around those other resources that we've been talking about. But to kind of provide some context for within the program area, how the governor's budget is kind of built with the available resources in human services. So this is really about the two big agencies, which is where most of the money is in the program area. The display shows for both Oregon Health Authority, OHA, and Department of Human Services, DHS, kind of how the existing governor's budget was put together or built. So the first line on there is the current biennium's budget, kind of the starting point. And then to build the budget, there's a bunch of standardized statewide adjustments that are made. Inflationary adjustments, mandated caseload. We had some one-time fund shifts in both agencies between biennia, so there were one-time resources available in the current biennium that went away for 15-17. So those were flipped back to general fund. That was built in as part of the current service level adjustment. And so just as a reminder, and if you were to look on our legislative fiscal office website, there is a document that talks in more detail about tentative budget and current service level and how those tools are used to plan and build a budget. But as a reminder, just kind of what current service level is really just a calculation. It's a benchmark tool that we use to identify kind of where the budget stands in terms of the existing program. It includes things like the current programmatic level pulled forward into the next biennium. Again, I talked a minute ago about roll-ups. So for new programs that were started midway through this current biennium, it reflects the full two-year spend for that program. So there's some roll-up in some of these things in both of these areas. There's also the mandated caseload adjustments built in there, inflation, some money for standardized salary projections across state government. All those things are built into this current service level number, which is on line 7 of that document. So that's kind of the standardized starting point, not only for these two agencies, but for all of state government. Then after that level, and the governor's budget took some actions that basically reduced the need, so you didn't need as much money to cover about the same sort of activity. So in Oregon Health Authority, there was a large fund shift related to assumptions around continuing and or enhancing the hospital assessment. So there was general fund that could be taken out because there was going to be other funds revenue available. And Linda will correct me if I'm wrong.
A lot of money.
A big chunk of money there. There was some other revenue on the table. There was some decisions made about delaying Oregon State Hospital, which required less money to be spent in the 15-17 window. And I think Senator Steinberg Hayward has a question.
I just had a really quick point to make. And I'm sorry Representative Stark isn't in the room, but I hope at some point he hears this. When I started doing Ways and Means seriously 2 years ago, this whole other funds thing was completely impenetrable to me. Chair Nathanson mentioned the whole thousands of millions problem, which is an issue in and of itself. But this other funds issue, I find really tough to parse. And I have long conversations with Mr. Borden, who's the scheduler for my subcommittee for general government. And I just really encourage people to try to dig into that, because that can be assessments that come from other agencies, that can be fees, that can be, and those assessments from other agencies can be actually general fund dollars, or they can be federal dollars, or they can be fees. I mean, the complexity of this issue makes these budgets often really impenetrable. And then we end up with these huge budgets that actually, if you really got down to it, some of it's actually being double counted, right? And there's this way to do this called no add accounting, but it's very tough to do with the current structure of our budgets. So as you look at these budgets, I really encourage you to kind of try to dig in to understand what these other funds are, and to, and I will say, I mean, some of you are very experienced at Ways and Means, but I have nothing but the most extraordinary respect and admiration for all of our analysts in LFO, and they have unfailingly been incredibly helpful to me and willing to answer any question two, three, or even four times as I try to get it into my brain what they're trying to teach me. So I just encourage, especially for those of you who are new to this particular sub, which is, as both of our chairs and others have mentioned, really complex stuff, to keep asking, because our analysts are fabulous. So take advantage of their expertise frequently.
Madam Chair, I do think there's an explanation, probably more clarity, of what the definition of other funds is and how it could very well have been over in the other agency, a federal fund. But once it gets transferred, between agencies, because they actually do, it becomes an other fund item. And LFO, it might be well to just to put a quick one or two line definition for new individuals. It's really not that complicated.
Well,
it's just that if I give you money that came out of the federal pot and it comes over to your agency,
right,
that becomes other funds. I agree with you that.
I didn't think it was complicated. I just said that it's important for people to I just was trying to say that it was important for people to understand that all the different sources of other funds and how it may be that we're counting general fund twice at some level, when we think about it, because money that's general fund that gets assigned to one agency but that gets given to another agency as an assessment is double counted.
Okay. And we will make sure as we move through these individual agencies that we identify those other fund sources.
Thank you.
I think the agencies are pretty good about trying to point that out as well. But definitely other funds is not, it's a variety of things. It's not just one flavor of money
exactly.
or resource.
Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make.
We have two major agencies where that money that comes from general fund goes to that agency. One is DAS, and the other one is Department of Justice. Just to know those two probably are the biggest receivers of the general fund dollars that become other fund dollars.
So we had been talking about changes that are reducing.
Yes. So in that first, as I said, there's a bunch of actions were taken in the governor's budget that basically reduced the need for as much to be in current service level. So that line 16 shows the total of kind of what the effect of those changes were. In the human services side or EDHS side, there was also some revenue and some caseload savings that were factored in, as well as some program reductions. So there are some reductions in the governor's budget in the Department of Human Services that we'll talk about in more detail. So that freed up resources. So on line 16, you'll see where it was about $678 million in OHA and about $148 million in DHS. And then the governor's budget took some of those resources and bought some stuff in the budget. So still within the program area, some things were purchased. In OHA, we factored in some roll-up for some actions taken in the biennium. There were some investments made in mental health and addictions and public health, health policy programs. And again, these are summarized. We'll talk about it in a little more detail, but to kind of give you a sense for what was kind of how the money was reinvested. You'll see that doesn't add up to $678 million. So what that says is that some of that resource freed up in the Oregon Health Authority was used to help balance the statewide budget. So that's that money didn't stay in the program area. So it went to help the overall statewide budget picture. On the human services side, there were some things that were purchased with some of those freed up resources. And this is some of the stuff you've heard about in the governor's budget, and it's some of the things that are on the co-chair framework priority list. There's some things in there that people are very interested in. There's some self-sufficiency investments. There's a TANF redesign that's a component of that. There's $50 million to expand employment-related daycare. There is investments in child welfare. There were some investments or positions and resources added last time. Those were continued. This is another layer of capacity for the department in that area. There are some aging people with disabilities includes ongoing investments that were made in the current biennium that we'll talk about when we talk about APD this next week. There was some money that was available because of the special session in 2013. Those investments were built into the current biennium and are rolled forward. There's some small investment on top of that. Developmental disability investments. There's investments that are primarily related to Employment First, a governor's initiative. There's some money set aside in the budget for potential rule change at the federal level, which requires to pay home care workers and personal support workers differently. And then there's some other small investments. So in DHS, there was about $145 million spent out of the money that was freed up. So even, you're still kind of at a current service level, but it's a mix of reductions and investments. So that kind of gives you a sort of a picture of where the governor's budget kind of sits for starting to think about how you would change that to get to the co-chair framework or the co-chair target. So that's, again, we will have a lot more information for you with more detail, and we'll talk a lot about the other funds and federal funds components. But this is trying to kind of give you an idea of sort of how that governor's budget is built and how they were able to buy stuff and still kind of be at a current service level number. And then at the very bottom, you have a program area total. We've also included the about $11 million general fund for the small agencies in the program area. And we'll talk about this when we talk about long-term care ombudsman, but that's an agency that grew significantly in 15-17 because two programs were added to that agency in the current biennium that were phased in, that were not fully funded, weren't funded over the course of the whole biennium. So that agency has significantly increased its budget because of that roll-up of those programs. So at the very bottom, it shows the $140 million. That's the target out there in the framework. Any other? Again, this is just kind of a snapshot. Very high level, very combined. It's just to kind of give you a flavor for what the task ahead might be. That was fun, wasn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
The next page is agency budget history for the agencies that come before the subcommittee. So this display does have that federal slash other funds, total funds component on there. So you can kind of see, for example, if you look at DHS, when you look at that display, there's about, total funds-wise, about 73% of the budget comes from non-general fund resources. So about 27% of the Department of Human Services budget comes from general fund. So really, like I said, about two-thirds of the budget is coming from other sources outside of the general fund. But the co-chair framework is focused in on trying to identify and free up the general fund, which can be used for any statewide purpose. So that's just kind of get a display. And well, again, we can provide a lot more detail about the individual programs and program components as well as the funding sources. But this is something to be thinking about as the agency comes forward and talks about their budgets, what percentage is general versus other and federal funds and how those dollars are spent, and what it takes in terms of state match or state level of resource to be able to draw those federal funds. So for different programs, it will be different as far as what's required on the state side to maintain those dollars.
Mr. Kocher.
Oh, thank you. Just to point out a couple things that that LFO is more than aware of, but others may not be. When you look at this sheet here of
you want that one?
Programs,
that's
yeah. Okay. You'll see inside your public employees benefit board, Oregon Educators Benefit Board. These are, for this budget, new. They were brought over in the last biennium. We didn't have control of this before. And so you'll, if you go back for it, and if you go to 11-13 or even before that, you'll see this sudden bump of a couple of billion dollars. You wonder where it came from. It's because this was not part of the budget before. It also gave us a first chance, though, especially in the PEB program, to start getting some controls on their costs.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we put a 3.4% cap. They actually beat that. They went flat as far as premium is concerned. I'm not sure they're going to be able to maintain that. There will be a real discussion of whether OEB goes into PEB now, and that's something we'll be after watching carefully, and it'll probably come to this committee for a bill going through if we do it. There'll be a lot of discussion about that, a lot of pushing and shoving. It's very political. Both these programs need to be maintained, but carefully in a way that costs are controlled. So when you look at this, remember that there's a big chunk here that's not federally fund matched. It changes the number on the bottom, so just subtract that in your brain when you're looking at the other programs, Medicaid and whatnot. It'll help you kind of get through that. And then there's a lot of small programs we spend too much time on. Commission for the Blind, Social Security Board, I get all upset. Not enough time on the other issues, so I'm hoping I'd like to have almost the point that we don't even take care of these anymore, but that'll never happen. But keep your eye on the prize, which is the big programs, the really expensive ones. And I'll be really interested in looking at caseloads as we go along. and what those caseloads are doing to the budget. That's probably the main, I'm going to guess that's going to be our major driver here is caseload.
Well, for human services, I think there's $226 million built into current service level that's caseload driven and additional. So, I mean, there's definitely caseload.
That's a big part, I'm guessing. Okay. Thank you.
We have a bit more to make sure we get through, right?
Okay, so the next section is the Budget 101 stuff, which if you'd like to go through it, we can. If you want to read through it on your own, what's your preference?
It's really basic. I think attended one of the orientations on Budget 101 in any other context?
When I was first, my first term.
What's your pleasure?
I can go, you know what I can do? I can go through the slides real quickly and tell you what's on them. And then you can decide if you want to go back and read them in more detail. Yes. Yeah, any of these are pretty high level.
That's fine.
So this is just kind of the big picture for kind of how budgets built in Oregon and a little bit on terminology. So I talked a little bit about things like current service level, but basically the budget is built on a principle of balancing revenue and expenditures. So the Office of Economic Analysis and Legislative Revenue Office work on the revenue side to figure out what the big general fund pie is going to look like, and the Legislative Fiscal works on the expenditure side to see what needs to be spent or what may not have to be spent to be able to match within revenue. So that's kind of the exercise, is trying to balance both of those things, as well as looking at not just that general and lottery fund component, but as well as what those funds leverage at this, you know, at the bigger level as far as federal and other funds. So balancing all that together. We budget on a biennial basis, so we'll be working on the budget that starts in July of 2015 and goes through June of 2017. And even though we have an annual session process now, that didn't change the biennial budget process. It left that two-year process in place, but we have an annual opportunity to revisit the budget if needed. Adjustments to the biennial budget in the interim are made by the E-Board or by the legislature during that short session. And the emergency board's ability to change budgets is much more limited than what can be done in an annual session. So you may hear discussions, especially as we talk about if we're looking at a recommendation in the budget that we'll probably need an adjustment later on, there may be discussion about, well, is this something the E-Board could manage, or is this something we need to be dealt with next February if there's a problem or something needs to be corrected? So that will be something that may come into the conversations about trying to build a budget and where at the checkpoints in time where potential issues may be able to be addressed if we know they're out there. And then the budget is the one thing the legislature has to do under the Constitution. They have to come out with a balanced budget. Appropriation bills, so every agency has its own appropriation bill. It's in the 5,000 series, whether that's in the Senate, or the Senate is 5,500 and House bills are in the 5,000 series, so that will be the numbering scheme for all the bills that you'll see for each agency. Those bills have already been assigned to an agency in the governor's process. We'll be amending those bills with the numbers that you all put together, but that's the starting point. There's about 100 agencies, and again, they range from very, very small to very, very large. So it kind of gets back to that question about how we display the budgets, trying to make sure that we are able to show both the tiny and the large at the same time. Bonding and capital construction issues will be separate from the plain agency budget bills. I don't think we're aware of any, Linda, capital construction issues for DHS or OHA right now. We're not aware of any projects for those agencies or any other human services agencies right now. Four fund types: general, lottery, other, and federal. And again, that other funds bucket has a lot of elements to it. It's not just a one-size-fits-all. A general fund is fungible, so it can be spent anywhere for any purpose in the state budget. Lottery funds has more strings attached. It's got dedicated components. And then other and federal funds are typically driven by law, either state or federal law, that says you can have this money is available or can be obtained, but you have to spend it for a certain purpose. And then some other funds and federal funds are broken into limited and non-limited categories. And human services, the non-limited portion that's federal funds is SNAP or food stamps. That's the only program that's like that in human services. Legislature appropriates general fund, allocate. This is just terminology on whether it's appropriated or allocated. So the legislature determines the spending levels, and then the Department of Administrative Services administratively monitors the spending and allots spending authority to the agency over the course of the two-year period. And they will also unschedule dollars, which means that funding is unavailable to be spent, and usually that's driven by some kind of action that the legislature would like the agency to take, and frequently some kind of communication or report back is required to be able to spend money that's been unscheduled or have it rescheduled. And you'll hear about this when the agencies come to you, but we track high-level expenditure categories. Personal services is what we pay employees in the state budget. Services supplies is stuff. Office supplies, equipment, costs for certain kinds of contracts, expendable property. And in human services, you'll see a lot of spending on special payments. And this is what's going out to directly provide for clients. So there's a lot of money in the human services program that goes out in client payments, whether to various client types. And DHS will talk about that when they come in before you with their presentation materials. Capital outlay is for certain types of products that have a longer term life with a certain level of value. On the next page, has to do with sort of that capital financing component of the budget. There is some debt service in both both OHA and DHS budgets. It's for various purposes, and we'll see that. You'll see that as the budget information is presented to you. That's basically paying back the loan or what with the money that was borrowed to do a project like the state hospital or to make an information technology investment. The budget also tracks positions and FTE, which are full-time equivalent. So a position count may be one, but a position might be half-time, so it's a 0.5 FTE. And you'll see both position counts and FTE counts in the budget data that you'll be presenting. Appropriation bills, the budgetary control, that's the product that comes at the end of the process. What comes out for the budget is a budget bill that has specific spending components in it, and then a budget report, which describes in more detail the expectation about how those dollars are supposed to be spent.
Lori, I'm going to stop for a minute. Sometimes when I explain our work or the legislature's work in budgeting, people are surprised to know we don't adopt a budget as in one bill, one big budget. All of the subcommittees combined consider, depending on what session it is, up to 100 different budget bills, because there are separate bills for agencies, commissions, boards, so forth. I don't know how many budget bills we hear in our subcommittee, but I bet it's a couple dozen at least, isn't it?
Well, there's one for each agency that comes before the committee. So I think we've got seven, and maybe a couple fee bills. And that's an Oregon convention. Not a lot of states will just have one big appropriation bill for all the agencies. And again, I don't know the history in that, but that's been the way it's been since I've been involved in budget. What we will likely have at the end of session, or maybe even early on, is what we would call a budget reconciliation bill. So even though the practice is to have individual agency budget bills, we can still have a budget bill that has lots of different stuff in it. And so probably at the end of session, there will be a bill that addresses several statewide issues. There may be assessment adjustments for some of the agencies like Department of Administrative Services, Department of Justice, where we maybe in the budget process we adjusted the rate they charge for something, or the hourly legal rate was adjusted. So there may be statewide changes for all agencies that would show up in that bill. Sometimes there is some money on the table to buy things at the end, and that gets put in that end of session bill. So there will be probably a bill that does some of that will involve lots of agencies.
We don't have that anymore.
Generally, it's one agency, one bill. It's their spending, and it's pretty clear that way what their budget is. You don't have to go through pages and pages to find out what the long-term care ombudsman's budget is. So budget reports, again, are what goes with that budget bill to sort of explain what the numbers mean. And then budget notes, Linda mentioned earlier, those are sometimes within those budget reports, and they typically are directing the agency to do something or take some kind of action related to a budgetary change that was made.
Madam Chair, just a point of clarification, that budget notes are a directive. They're not a force of law. I mean, I don't know how many legislators come and think that if I do a budget note that we passed the bill.
I believe under our publications on the LFO website, I believe there's a budget brief on budget notes. I think there's one on fund types. I think there's one on how positions are budgeted. There's several different standalone documents about some of these processes that you may find helpful if you want to dig into it. But I'm pretty sure we have one on budget notes and explaining what they are compared to other terminology or other elements of the budget and legislative process. Budgetary limits, there is some limits on, there's the kicker law that has to do with the revenue side, there's some appropriation, there's an appropriation limit law, there's a limit on the number of FTE. The budget gets built within those limits. But those are some of the things out there you may hear people talk about. Drivers of budget change, population, demographics, caseload, a lot of things play into what will drive the cost of continuing a program to be higher. And then state policy decisions and sometimes, you know, federal policy changes. So in this program area, we'll probably hear about some federal changes like that U.S. Department of Labor rule change I talked about earlier. There's also been a change in the Workforce Investment Act that's going to require a vocational rehabilitation to do some things differently. So there'll be some federal policy stuff that does drive potential budget changes or programmatic changes in these agencies. And then the last two slides are just kind of the process. So during the session, the governor's budget was released on the 1st of December. I'm starting over here on the number one arrow. We took a look at the governor's budget. We just did a little bit of analysis. Sometimes we produce a big publication. We did not do that this time because we were working with the co-chairs on their framework document. We did work with them on some of that information. Co-chairs and leaders set some priorities for the kind of budget plan, that framework. We'll provide information on the budget, and we'll make some recommendations working with you on the budget. You'll meet and try to figure out how you want to drive this budget process and make a recommendation to the full committee, which is basically passing that bill out of here as amended to the full committee for them to take action. And then when all the budgets are done, signing die happens.
That's Friday this week.
Huh?
Friday this week.
Yeah, I heard you have a plan. That's what I was told. And then this last slide is to sort of then what happens once that budget's in place. And then agencies use the allotment process to have authority to spend money. They work with the chief financial office and us over the interim to monitor the budget and adjust as needed. They may come to the emergency board. They start working almost as soon as this session's over, next spring, early in the year, they start working on developing the budget for the next time around. So their agencies are perpetually in a budget development cycle almost. So that's kind of the high-level budget information. That is the end of the orientation material packet. There, like I said, there's a lot of other information out there. There's publications on our website. There's information on agency websites about programs. So if you're looking for certain types of information, just ask us about it. We'll try to, we can probably direct you to it, or we can help try and put some pieces together for you if it's going to help you with your budget review process.
And I would just reiterate, please, I know some people here are new. Please just feel free to call us and sit down. I know sometimes it's a little hard to ask all the questions you have in committee because you don't want to interrupt too much. So, you know, anytime we're happy to sit down with folks.
And the other thing is if you're really, really interested in kind of getting a full flavor for sort of how a budget process went through the subcommittee, we could work with you and show you, take a budget bill from last session from 2013, and you can go into OLIS. And because of OLIS now, you've got access to all the information that was provided kind of chronologically over the course of that budget review process. So you could see, you know, the presentations, you could see Q&As that came in. If you really want to dig, I mean, there's a lot of information in OLIS that would kind of provide you some context for sort of how the budget flow went through the course of the session. And at the end is where you'd see the work sessions and that documentation that comes out of the subcommittee.
Lori, there's a couple other things I'd like you to talk to us about, lingo that we're going to see a lot during these presentations. FTE, full-time equivalent. I think most people have a handle on what FTE means. It's interesting, sometimes when there's a proposal to start a new program, if the program wouldn't be able to be implemented until, let's say, midway or partway through the biennium, because it takes a while to maybe hire a director or you know, develop the plans and so forth, you will see something that looks pretty strange at first, like maybe 0.23 FTE being proposed. It's not that someone thinks it just takes a quarter time to do that, but that's the portion of
the year that would need to be funded. Is there anything else you want to explain about that can really trip you up when you're looking at a proposal. You think, oh, they're just adding a quarter time.
Well,
but that's just how much money was needed for that budget.
So make sure we ask questions about, is this really truly a part-time thing? And you will find in some of the governor's budget pieces, as well as what the legislature does, there will be, because if we add something because first of all, it's hard to ramp up right away. So you can't ramp up right away. Plus, in this budget period, it costs less if we start it halfway through. We only have to pay for 1 year of the program. So if we're trying to find money to do lots of stuff, it's easy to do that. But then the next biennium, the cost doubles. So you will see some of that, especially with new initiatives, to try and kind of get those started without having to bear the full cost in the biennium we're currently working on the budget for.
Madam Coulter.
I have just a couple more to ask about. And could you talk for a moment about limited duration, why we see some proposals that come in with an LD on them?
Representative Nates and members of the subcommittee. So limited duration positions are positions that are established for a limited period of time, just like the name says. Frequently where you may see those is there may be a grant. There may be a grant that's for a three-year period in a health authority where they know that they only need this activity supposed to happen for 3 years. And so they'll ask for a limited duration position to try and manage that grant over a period of time. The other time it gets used is we're starting up something new. Not really sure exactly what kind of capacity is needed. Want to make sure that we kind of keep tabs on that. So by establishing a limited duration position, which doesn't kind of keep going, it provides an opportunity to check in with the agency and say, okay, you had limited duration positions last biennium for this. How did that work out? How is that going? Is that really meeting your need? And it forces that conversation a little bit. So you'll see it in that instance. The other thing that happens is under a statute, Department of Administrative Services can administratively establish limited duration positions for agencies. So they have a workload that crops up middle of the biennium. Maybe they need to do a bunch of redeterminations at the Oregon Health Authority. They need extra help. So they bring on limited duration staff. They have to demonstrate that they have money to cover it in the budget, that they can pay those salaries, but they're not permanent positions. And so in order to get those established permanent on an ongoing basis, they'll come back in and asked to have those made permanent. So it's a tool that agencies use to manage workload, but it's also a tool that I think legislature uses sometimes to kind of monitor a program, especially when it's either in it very beginning stages or it's one that's very volatile. It kind of helps keep tabs on what the capacity is like for as far as staffing. And staffing and positions can be a sensitive topic, and those are things that do drive budget. Although in human services, most of the budget is driven by payments to clients.
And one last terminology thing, limited, unlimited, and non-limited.
You'll see limited in reference to both other funds and federal funds. And so because those dollars are not part of the general fund bucket that get handed out, they're usually a revenue stream related. So for example, if I have a fee revenue stream, a certain group of people are paying a fee for a service, they pay the fee for the service regardless of what my budget is, or there's a revenue stream that comes in based on some kind of volume. That revenue sits there, and then a limitation is used to spend some of that revenue. So I may have $40,000 in this revenue stream, but the legislature has looked at my budget and decided that to run the actual program, I only need 20. So they give me $20,000 limitation so I can spend that revenue to run my program. That's the kind of limitation piece. Then there is non-limited, which is really not used very much. It's for things where there is maybe Linda can explain this better, where there's a program there's a revenue stream associated with it and there are payments associated with it, but there's really no control, or there's no way to really control or manage that. The SNAP program is one in human services. That's a federal grant program. It's not capped. As long as you have people who are eligible, you can get the money to buy the food stamps or the EBT card. So that program fluctuates, ebbs and flows. And so having it non-limited allows DHS, if all of a sudden they had this huge influx, it allows them to go ahead and run that program, make those payments. It's, again, I think there's only a handful of programs like that. There may be some, is there some revolving funds? I think in PERS, there's PERS payments to retirees are ran through a non-limited program. Again, those payments just go out. The department can't control who's eligible to retire when they come into the system. So there, it's pretty narrow as far as where that's used. And over time, we've tried to really limit the use of non-limited.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to try to adjourn in about 7 or 8 minutes, and there's a queue. We have Representative Olson.
I think Senator Winters was ahead of me there.
Stark and Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just Senator Bates reminded me of a practice that we had. Sometimes asked me if I still had the pig, because you asked the question of FTE. And when I chaired this committee, probably more than others, will have more alphabets than probably any other, because you have so many new members here. And a lot comes from the agency as well as the advocates, because it's a terminology and thing that they've got in the habit and custom of doing. I had a pig, because not only do you need to know what they're talking about, but I believe that the general public who's right, listening and what have you, also needs to know what we're talking about and becomes a lot more transparent. So when I was chair, they were fined if they used acronyms. It's kind of interesting how the language changed and the understanding was increased. And, you know, as everybody, I don't care who it was, would we actually, and then we decided which nonprofit would benefit from the fine and assessments. So that was kind of one to try to be as more transparent and open, because sometimes we forget that we're talking language that the general public does not understand. And so they hear these alphabet soups that we spew out, and they're questioning, what is it that you guys were talking about? I didn't know. And particularly, you know, this agency probably has more than most, because it filters down from the federal down to us and what have you. And you sit here, and sometimes you're too embarrassed to ask the agency, what does that mean? So this was a way of trying to get more clarity, not only for ourselves, but for the general public.
Thank you.
And he reminded me of that.
I'm going to pass.
It didn't include an acronym, did it?
Yeah, you don't like acronyms? Fine, I'm leaving.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Chair Bates. A quick question on the full-time equivalencies. a clarification on that, if you will,
sure,
for me. I've seen agencies count that or report that in different ways, where some will say we have 20.5 FTE, and some will say we have, 10 FTEs. So when our paperwork, when people report on FTEs, what is the standard? Can, 70 FTE, does that mean 70 full-time positions, or could that be 140 part-time positions?
Representative Stark knows something. What you should be seeing are two things. A position count, which tells you how many positions. Mm-hmm. So it might be 100 positions. And then a full-time equivalency, which may be, okay, it may be 100, because those are 100 full-time positions, or it may be 0.7575. So you'll see both pieces of information.
Okay.
And so then, again, that, and in that full-time equivalency, unfortunately, it can be a mix. It could be a bunch of part-time positions. Mm-hmm. It could be some positions that are starting up that aren't fully phased in yet. So there's a lot of a variation of what can be in that full-time equivalency number. But normally, we display it with a decimal point and up to two decimal points, so it should trigger that's a full-time equivalency number and not a position count, which will always be a whole number. And usually we try to show those things together so that they're married up.
Thank you.
And if you want position information, there's all kinds of data and reports and stuff in the budget binder, so the agencies will bring it, well, have on OLIS. There's a lot of history and detail on positions, so we can always get a lot of detail on positions as needed, and we can summarize it too. I think there's also a budget brief on position counts and full-time equivalency and how they're captured in the budget that's in our publications as well.
Any other questions? Yes.
Just real quick, The slide you have there right now is key drivers of the budget change. And I'd ask that if we have time, I understand you want to get out of here. I didn't know that's fine. The next session we have, we can start with that just for a quick discussion, sure. 15, 20 minutes. This is the, to me, of all the information presented today, thank you for doing a great overlay. It's very well done. If we can get these broad policy issues into our minds as we go through these budgets, it drives every single one of these budgets just about. And I'd like to have kind of an open discussion on that for 15, 20 minutes on the next session. Okay? All right.
Any other questions? So we're ready to dig in now. Tell us, you had a slide at one point of what you thought the progression might be. Give us a sense of the next week.
The budgets that we're going,
Madam Chair,
the presentations that we're going.
Right.
Have.
So tomorrow we'll hear from the governor's policy advisors and DAS on the governor's budget high level. And if we want to go back to some of the budget drivers, maybe that would probably be the time, maybe after they finish. Mm-hmm. I doubt that they will take the whole time. And then next week, Monday, it will be the DHS overview with the director. And Tuesday and Wednesday will be presentations on aging and people with disabilities. And then Thursday is long-term care ombudsman.
Okay.
And then just, so back on this page, we had the full list to try and give you sort of the
yes.
context for how long this is going to take. Mm-hmm. So pretty much this first section that has Department of Human Services and a couple small agencies is going to take about February. About February to cover all those programs. Again, DHS has five large programs with some peripheral programs we'll be going through. And then that next chunk is pretty much going to be March. So it's going to take about that much time to get through the bulk of these presentations. And then, as Linda, as we talked before, as we go through those, we're going to be winnowing down sort of what the phase two discussion points need to be. And we know from past experience, we'll have agencies come back to talk with you about issues in that phase two process. So.
Mm-hmm. Stuff comes up during the presentation.
Yes.
Then they come back. Thank you very much. Anything else? Okay, here we go. We're adjourned for today.
Okay, here we go.
Excited today.
Okay, here we go.
We're adjourned.